Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shane Attack.
Is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated offers the maximum discount on Privateer Press products. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free or reduced shipping. You can find the web store at www.discountgamesinc.com. Welcome to Chain Attack, the War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm your host, Trevor, and I want to play Crucible Guard.
Mm-hmm.
It stares at me every time I walk out the door because it's sitting right next to the door in an easy-to-reach place.
That's good. That's the 30-second rule.
That's the 30-second rule? Like place it in a location where you only need 30 seconds to get it going?
Correct.
Well, actually, I fail on that.
Any impediment.
You try to, if there's a task you want to do, you try to make it so you have to expend as little startup energy to get going as possible.
Now, you clearly have violated the 30-second rule by placing a 80-page paper or something like that between you and other tasks, but
I think it's going to be longer than that.
You're probably employing the 30-second rule on your paper, so
listen,
congratulations.
There's we have a Champions League coming up for the store.
In July, right?
Right, mm-hmm, and I fully plan on playing in that. Because I believe my normal pairing now works.
Well, hold that thought.
We'll see. I'm actually not sure if it, I can't remember what the...
Well, my normal pairing before was like, it was either Sylvestro or
Gearheart, right?
Gearheart, and then Locke would be the off list. Yeah. So that would cover both themes. So, and I don't remember who's out this time around, but I'm pretty sure it's none of those guys.
I can't remember who's out for
either. I can make it work.
I'm Jay. And I almost feel like I cheated on my
faction selection.
Like I'm married to Crucible Guard, and I've been having this torrid affair with Grimkin.
It does seem quite tawdry as I find the pictures.
But last night I didn't have time to be able to do like a full normal length game at our game night, and so I asked my opponent if we could do 7-minute turns with a 3-minute extension, and it was so much fun. It made me think of Josh so much because it's exactly the type of thing that Josh loves so much.
I just love the time pressure. I don't know what's wrong with me.
It was a lot of fun, and I mean we were done in about 70 minutes, something like that, from start to end.
Delicious. So. It's so delightful. And I'm Josh, and I love time pressure, clearly, since I spent most of my career as an estimator, and I've played so many hardcore lunch games back in the day. And I have questions about ADR. Is it Season 9 or Season 10 that's coming up?
Nick to Ferrata.
Like, I'm so confused by what the
current season is.
Yeah, and which of my casters are, because I've been playing Sturm und Drang joyfully. And I thought I looked at something a couple weeks ago that showed that Rask and Midas were two of the casters that were going to be on my
list. I think
they are.
Well,
I can't find that again.
Well, did you look in the CID forum?
Oh, that's where I found it. No.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, okay. I'll be back.
Okay.
Anyway, so I have my champions list ready also, but I clearly need better 30-second rules for my own ability to arrive at Wednesday night War Machine.
Evidently, granted, how are things currently looking at, like, the projects being finished in June and life semi-resuming for the Wheeler?
They're okay. I'm still in pretty good shape for that.
Excellent. We might
have the one bad thing is that my main project manager is retiring.
After this project's over? Or
no.
Mid-project?
Today.
Okay.
I'm still optimistic, though. We're in good shape.
Okay, good. Have you, do you guys have any prospects in the pipeline?
Yes.
Good.
One of them is currently General Foreman on this project.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, maybe at some point this summer, I don't know how many people we would actually get, but it would be interesting for us to try to
Are you about to propose a 7-minute lunch league?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
A 7-minute lunch.
I am so on board. think I would. I gotta think about that.
And it would have to be on. So Wednesday night is our game night, and there's a lot of times I travel on Monday or Friday, and so it'd be a Tuesday or Thursday. But
sold.
We'll put it under consideration.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've looked one up yet, but if you haven't figured out your Dink Doom meme yet for the episode, Josh.
Oh, I haven't, no.
You better get busy, because like I was contacted by a lot of listeners who were like almost offended that Hungerford insinuated
that the Dank Doom meme was a mistake.
Yes.
I mean, I'll get looking one up, but I have to say that right now I don't have much dankness in my soul, because knowing that the Sisterhood show is being developed is like, that's not a this meme anymore.
Blowed your
that's
mind.
It's amazing. So delicious.
It was unexpected, at least for me.
Well, yeah, it was for me, yeah, 100%.
It's interesting as well that, like, it feels like Legendary and Dennis, like, I would assume by now I should actually have learned how to say this person's last name, who I admire, but Villanueva or whatever.
Yeah, works for me. We know who you mean, sir. You should just say V. Just call him Dennis V.
Dennis, right? V.
Yeah. Probably Brilliant. DV for short.
Yeah. I guess creating these franchises is all the rage right now, but it's interesting that it seems like that's what they're trying to do, and that he's going to be doing the pilot of the show.
Oh, so he's only doing the pilot of the Sisterhood. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He's helping with the rest of the development as well.
He's probably producer. He's just not going to.
I don't know. I love the idea of it, like exploring the Bene Gesserit.
I might not have a Dink Doom meme, but I do have some.
I do have one, by the way.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So I'll do a prelude then to the meme. So the first one is there's two groups that you might not be part of.
Okay.
I need to share the story with you, Josh.
Okay. All right. I'm ready.
So the first one is Dune Siege Posting.
I don't know why, but for some reason I imagine that this is like somebody's report of their Dwarf Fortress game. But okay, so what happens on Dune Siege Posting?
People just do Dank Doom memes generally. But it's obviously the Siege is a Fremen community, and so it is a bad pun on Siege Posting and Shit Posting.
Oh, okay, I got it. Okay.
Then there's another group that their group name, I think the name itself got changed to this, Dune Beef Swelling.
What?
I love that that's your reaction, because that's what any, and like periodically people will start threads like, why?
Why is this our
why
name?
Why is this our name? And their response in general is, it's funny, and it annoys some people. So, okay.
Okay, the most recent Dank Doom meme, it's the one that says, men only want one thing, and it's absolutely disgusting. And then it's a picture of it's a toy Sardaukar laser las gun. With electronic sounds and flashing lights.
That's
all,
one of those.
That's all men want, Trevor.
I want one.
That is the day.
We are simple beasts.
You are not wrong.
Okay, well, now that we have hit the high point of the episode.
It's all downhill from here.
Dink Doom memes. Let's continue on, I guess. The show must go on.
Yes. Thank you, Jay, for reminding me about the CID forum, because I did confirm that it's Rask and Midas. I'm just glad I didn't have practice games going to waste. Oh, who cares who else? I chose those who are. It's Bloody Barnabas and Helga. Which Helga would be fun to.
What?
Barney One's awesome.
Barney One's chopped liver?
He's just like, he's like,
he's always there for
he's
you.
Just awesome, you know?
Oh, like,
he's so 2012.
Yeah. There's no argument to be made that he's not good, so.
So who are the Crucible Guard ones, just to humor me?
Crucible Guard. These won't change. Well, they could change still, right?
Like, they could change, yeah.
Yeah, they could. Where the heck I'm pretty sure the Circle ones.
So Sylvestro, yes. McKay, and Gearheart.
That's
Because you can't have Sylvestro and Gearhart normally as your
pairing. Do Sylvestro as a Prima Materia.
Oh.
Yeah. And you could do...
You could mix it up.
You could easily have McKay be your...
Yeah, you could have McKay be Prima Materia,
As well.
Okay.
It's not horrible. It's just it's a little different than my current style.
Let's see. And Jay's... For Infernals? Jay's... Oh, please. Let's not pretend like you're playing Infernals. Jay's Grimkin does have the King of Nothing.
Okay.
You dirty, dirty man. Infernals...
I mean, I probably will be playing... I'll probably... Well, go ahead.
He's gonna one-list Clockatry.
No.
Clockatry.
he's gonna somehow play Hearts of Darkness with Clockatry. No, so Infernals is Zadaroth, Omadamos, and Commander Andre Malkal, and Fiora 3, right? That's who Fiora the Conquering Flame is.
I mean, my pairing will probably be Fiora 3 and Zadaroth.
What's the theory behind Fiora 3? Like, what do you play her with?
Well, one of the things, like, I've been wanting to play a Judicator with Severius Zero.
Okay. Like, with Sevi Zero running the Judicator, or is that?
No.
Oh, okay. Just running. Like, just Sevi Zero for his abilities, basically.
Yeah. Turns out having +3/+3 is really good in this game, in case you were wondering.
I wasn't. I've noticed that -3/-3 can be pretty bad.
Okay. Well. That's I'm looking forward to playing that. So, I'll play with that, and then there'll be some infernal stuff that will help keep Fiora alive as opposed to some of the other instances. So that'll be cool. Tyson Koch is actually painting Fiora 3 and Severius Zero for me, and at least Fiora 3, he's doing her up in like some infernals colors as opposed to.
He's so good too. Is he working on some kind of flight base for the Grievers?
Grievers Swarm, yeah.
Okay.
He's already put pictures out of it.
I thought I'd seen them. Yeah,
they're pretty impressive.
I just couldn't remember the unit for a minute of who it was being made for.
Yeah, they're pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean that's what I'll be playing for the Champions League.
Okay. Well, we may discuss more later.
I'm guessing we will.
Tell us, Jay, of the beauty that is Muzon Store.
Let's start with the community builders first, Josh.
Oh, geez, did we not do that already?
Not quite yet.
I just felt so built by the Dank Dune meme that I thought I had already been built. Okay, so this week's community builders is post on sportsmanship. What will the prize be this week, Jay?
It's going to be some Muzon minis. Licensed zones.
Ooh, they're so nice, too. They look so nice. Okay, so the nomination we've selected this week for sportsmanship, which, just a minor comment here, I feel like sportsmanship is not getting as many nominations as some of our other community builder posts. So please, next time that rolls around, let's be in a more sportsmanshipy observant mind, I think, is what I'm asking. But this nomination came from one Nathan Reinhardt. And he says, last week I played against my buddy Mari Weiss. We have a great 3 years-long multi-faction rivalry going. Currently, it's my Crix against his Scorn. The back and forth has been great, each of us bringing better lists, new casters, and tighter battle plans as the years went by. For almost a month, he had been really excited to bring his new Supreme Guardian into Scar 1. He loves the big swinging models, and I know he wanted so bad to thresher all 5 of my Bane Cav and annihilate my Wraith engine. I mean, he's not wrong. Well, Nathan says, I'm a dick.
That doesn't sound like sportsmanship.
I switched some things up. I changed theme to Black Industries and put Iokos 1 with a Kraken in my list. I 2-punched his Guardian on top of 2. He was so excited to finally bring it, and he lost him immediately. I killed quite a bit on the other side of the table, and it really crippled his whole game. Bless him, though, he trooped on and played the next turn as best as he could, even with the arm swing I had. He admitted that was probably game, but he kept with it and fought as well as he could. I think that's true sportsmanship. Well, in that case, I am a true sportsman, I'm here to tell you. And Brandon Blanchard also added to this nomination. He said, this is true of every game I've played with Mari. He's competitive but fun, always brings a solid list to the table along with a great attitude. And I think that is real sportsmanship, is your positive attitude in the face of both victory and defeat.
Awesome.
So, congratulations, Mari. Thanks for your fantastic sportsmanship.
And let's do a preview of
next week's post.
Yeah.
So, next week's post is on getting new people into the game. And we already have a couple really solid nominations, but we'd like to see many more.
Awesome.
These stories nourish my soul in a way that Dank Dune memes, frankly, also does. But
I'll probably. I was looking through my cupboard, and back in the day with the launch of Mark III, if you ordered certain launch kits, you got some promotional stuff, and some of them were Journeyman League kits.
Okay.
And so I have a few Journeyman League kits that are extras, that even after running several here at the store. But I'll do a post in the Community Builders, and people can respond with why they think their community would be awesome to receive those, and whoever the whim or fancy hits me, I'll select and send out that too. So
cool.
If that interests you, then check out the Community Builders. So shilling for Muzon Minis and Discount Games Inc.
Mm-hmm.
The move line tray for Guild Ball, which is going to be officially licensed and have some artwork from Steamforged on it, should be live by the time you hear this podcast. So if we have any cross-pollination, you can check that out. And hopefully by next Wednesday, we should have the pre-sale for the Infernals tokens live. So those are both some new products from Muzon Minis that should be pretty exciting.
Can I see a preview of those yet, Jay? The Infernals tokens?
No.
Okay. Are they? I want to know if they are at all similar to the bases that I saw you putting together the other day. By the way, where did those beauties come from?
Those Nigel made those. Let me actually see if I can find from Nigel a preview of what one of the tokens looks like. You've seen what did I show you guys the bases, or
I saw a picture of them somewhere. Yeah,
I don't know if you posted them on Twitter or Facebook.
I lose track of where I see pictures of things, Jay. That probably is a commentary on my social media manager.
I was able to find one. Here is an example of this. Would be, I'm not sure if this would be an upkeep spell token or what, but here's one of the tokens that Nigel's been working on.
Oh, yes. Creepy.
So it
looks
has,
like you might have to sell your soul to get that one. I'm just saying.
You might. So we're some exciting things coming out from Muzon Minis. Looking forward to that. Next we have Discount Games Inc. So we should, by the time this is live, we should likely have some more contrast paint sets put up for sale. They might be sold out by the time this is live. But I did want to talk a little bit about some of the shipping stuff with some of the Games Workshop product and primers in general. So in general, Discount Games Inc. has carried primers in our store, but we haven't sold them online because the shipping of primers is not easy. But I think that
I've never thought of that, because they're in aerosol cans.
Yeah. Okay. But with Games Workshop items, we can't sell Games Workshop stuff to anyone who is outside of the United States. That's just one of their
policies.
Selling rules.
Yeah, it's been that way for a while.
Yeah. And so international aerosol cans is like, just don't even try. So that works out fine there. But we still haven't done it because it's the way that our free shipping works, etc. It's easy for us to have primer that ends up making a transaction lose money. But we're going to start offering the Games Workshop primers on our site. And the way that it'll work is, usually there is, if you're ordering miniatures from us, you get free shipping at $30. This is going to change. If you order a primer, add that into your order, then it'll have some shipping on the order. The caveat with it, or the bonus or whatever, is that if you get your order up to $150 and you're a domestic customer, then your shipping will be free. And so if you're interested in primers, just get your order up a little bit in value, and you'll get free shipping on it, which isn't that far past where you want to get it anyways, in order to get some secret deals that are too good to be advertised. So, and also, if you're wanting primers, then that's only going to be available in the continental United States. I'm sorry, Alaska and Hawaii, but I cannot ship you aerosol cans.
Yeah, jeez. Do you Have you seen yet someone, like, in person, have you seen the contrast paints applied yet? I mean, I understand it's pretty
soon. I have
not,
no.
Okay. Because the pictures I've seen of, like, you know, guys who've been using them already, previews, I'm, like, seriously blown away.
So I do have a friend who, he used some of them yesterday.
Okay.
And this was his review of it. He said that he was covertly given a chance to test the new contrast paints, and they're awesome. And I said...
Covertly.
Yes. Yeah,
no longer covert.
Sinister.
Well, totally is. and I said, I just... Basically, my response was, I just hope that they make a ton of these so that people can... There's a lot of people excited about them, want to buy them, etc. And he said, you'll sell a ton of it. It's actually really fun. And he said, and that's coming from someone who hates painting.
Wow.
So that was his review of it.
Fun even for someone who hates painting.
Yes.
That's a pretty good tagline, honestly.
Am I supposed to be testing this? Because I'm afraid I'm still going to hate it.
I mean, I'm sure you will.
You don't hate painting. You hate, like, the constraints of time and space.
No, I actually hate painting. Listen, the last time I painted a model, and it's been a few years now, I spent 16 hours on a single model.
Was it your carver?
Yes.
Oh, that model's, it turned out so amazing.
But the truth
I don't think the contrast is going to
address his perfectionism.
Yes.
It might.
Oh, I mean, it won't.
The fact that I can just put on a single color and be like, oh, yeah, look, it's got highlights and shadows.
And
in theory.
Right.
I have heard from a few places that, in general, models that have movement or cloth or, you know, rippling fur, etc., motion, that those tend to...
They do the best.
Do
or
the
better.
Best with it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Some flat surfaces like a Warjack, not as well.
I don't really know, but it looks like something like Zenithal priming also would probably help additional contrast with it. So you could take a model, you know, paint it black and then Zenithal prime it with white. And
what
then,
is the word that you just said, Zenithal priming? Is that where you like spray from the top or something?
From the top
like
at a distance, it basically would, it just...
It kind of starts some shadows
for you.
Puts an
overspray mist kind of on the model in highlighted locations to start with. You're asking the wrong guy. You realize that, right?
Really, I'm seriously curious about the etymology of Zenithal, but that's okay that you can't tell me that.
I probably more understanding of that than the actual process.
Oh, okay. Well, give me the etymology then. Where the heck does that word come from?
From the zenith.
It's using
a location as a light source,
okay.
And then you're spraying from that location and pretending that the paint is the light source.
I thought this was like some kind of alien overlords that brought this down to you from on high.
No.
Zenithal sounds pretty like...
Yeah, sure.
It could have been the leader of a Sardaukar legion.
Sure.
Bonus stank doom meme right there.
But anyway, then once you've placed that on there, that places tonal things on the miniature already.
I was taught about that for the 30 days that I was into Grimkin and Tyson Koch. Like, he painted my models, and, like, watching him do that kind of priming, I was amazed by.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So...
Yes, Jay?
I feel like, you know, our listeners, hopefully by this point, have divined that we're doing an early morning record and are punch drunk. And
I mean, it's pretty fair to think that you just can
just
guess...
How we are.
Yeah, you can just guess that it's early morning record every time.
And
that's about half
really,
the time you might be right.
That's not really true.
I'm also 4 days into fasting. So.
Oh, my heavens, Josh.
Listen, if I get my new job, we might be doing this at every record. I don't know if I can afford to...
Always early morning, huh?
Afford to what?
To take lunch breaks that are as long as we take them to record sometimes. We'll see.
I'm so excited for you.
I'm not going to get it, but I'm throwing that out there.
Do you know how many you're narrowed down to?
How many people?
Yeah.
No, I have no clue.
I mean, we could off some competitors. We have an international reach. You know? If you just get us some names, it would be like like Cyberpunk 2019.
We have to have some Sicilian fans somewhere.
Jeez.
Anyway, I was going to say that to give you like some hope or joy to look forward to, I just got sent a Dank Doom meme that will be a bonus meme at the end of the episode.
Oh, my gosh. Now, not that I couldn't make it through to the end of the episode already anyway, but now I totally can.
So how's day four going for you, Josh?
That's fine. This is actually my third 5-day fast of the month.
What?
I basically have not been eating on weekdays.
Okay.
It's your third 5-day fast of the month, and it is the 13th.
Okay, in a month.
In a month. Okay, I was like, Josh, the math does not work out.
I have transcended time and space. And I'm down 23 pounds.
Huh?
Hopefully it will hold.
Wait for it.
I'm smoking some apple jalapeno ribs that I'm really excited about for Father's Day. So that could blow it all, probably. Maybe.
20 pounds of ribs. Here we go.
it probably could make you very sick.
Yes. Well, I will have eaten a little bit before then, but
okay,
we'll warm up.
Okay. So last episode, when William Hungerford said that we needed to do a Lock and Load preview, and who are we to say no to that?
Yeah, who are we to argue with Will, except for
when it comes to Dank Doomings?
Towards Dank Doomings.
Okay, fair.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the only thing he's really ever been wrong about.
Yeah, the only thing ever.
I feel like if it had been Pagani on the show, he would have just fully encouraged us to just go full Dank Doom memes.
Oh,
like an hour worth of Dank Doom.
I'm pretty sure he posts some for me occasionally.
Oh, yeah. He's like you.
He's a Siege poster.
It is his favorite book, and he definitely is a Siege poster. So let's start off with a tell of the journey of Jay's Infernals models.
This is gonna be great.
Well, okay, I don't want to oversell this because it's not that great. So several weeks ago I found out that I was going to be getting some pre-release models of Infernals, and I contacted a few painters to try to see if they were even feasible for them to do and what their pricing would be, etc., and started negotiating things. And so one of the people that I chatted with is one of our locals, Ashton, and I asked him if he was interested, and we ended up working things out, and I told him that I was hoping to get a list or two, but really as much as we could, ready for Lock and Load. And he's like, well, I think we can do that. It'll, it's going to be tight. I'm going to have to work hard, but I think we can get that done. So I was like, awesome. And
if you ever meet my Dracodile, it is one of Ash's finest
works of art. Yes. Yeah.
It's amazing.
I just recently posted a Facebook memory of me winning the Iron Gauntlet 5 years ago. And it was, had a picture of me and Jason Watt playing the final, and part of the picture was this big, beautiful storm wall that Ashton painted. And
also amazing.
Yes, and one of his replies was like, wow, that storm wall looks awesome. I'm like, you're damn well right. So, fast forward, one of the community leaders for our Facebook group for War Machine, when it gets to War Machine Day, he'll do a post and he'll say, roll call, who all's going to be out to game night tonight? And Ashton replied and said, I can't make it this time. Jay's being a slave driver, and I've got to get the models ready for July. And so I started a side conversation with...
That's a different month than June.
With Ashton. I'm like, Ashton, I think I may have failed in communication with you, but... When do you believe Lock and Load is? And he's like, well, it's always in July. And I'm like, no.
Did that used to be true? Was that ever true?
I think the last few years it's been June. I think there was like a year or two when it was July. So I was like, well, actually.
Oh, shoot.
I leave in a week. So... we have trimmed out the fat and have identified the key models for me to take an Ahmed Almost list, which is a caster that he's already completed. And I will have a Infernals list to take to
Lock and Load.
Lock and Load, yeah.
In a week and change.
I mean, I'm leaving literally a week.
Yeah, in exactly a week. Okay,
yeah.
Nice.
But I can...
Are you telling us the list?
Talk about the list that...
Is Infernal... It's not live on War Room yet, is it?
No, it's very sad. I wish it was.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I'm assuming that it will be live before like the night before or something like that.
Are you building the list in Conflict Chamber?
Okay. Yeah. So this is the list that I have. I have Amadamas, the Black Gate.
The Blackest.
A Foreboder, which is the Arc Node. Two Lamenters.
Hey, what theme is Jay?
Right? This is Dark Legacy.
Sorry, go ahead. So Amadamas.
A Foreboder.
Okay.
Two Lamenters.
Okay.
A Shrieker. Two Tormentors. Three Wretches. Two Umbral Guardians. Valen Hawk, the Fallen Knight. Two Min Cultist Bands and one Max Cultist Band with the Command Attachment and the Infernal Gate. And I don't know how many summoning things I'm going to need in an average game, but we're going to be playing this with, I'm just going to have two Tormentors and two Desolators, so four heavies. And I guess if I get to the point where I was like, man, I wish I could put a fifth heavy on the table, I've probably already winning anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't feel like you'll need more than that.
And I definitely could see situations where
you say those will be coming through the gate. Not necessarily. Your master could still bring them too.
Well, we'll see where the gate ended up at, but where it was previously, you would it reduced the summoning cost by one, and so it made it cheaper too. And then you could summon near either the gate or your master. Is there some foul math going on with this list?
Well, I missed Faustus. No, I didn't. No, he's the attachment. I don't know. In my conflict chamber, this is not showing a 75 points yet. Like,
I mean, it might. What is it? Is mine saying
75? Oh, I'm 75? Missing a Tormentor. I missed the Tormentor.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Carry on.
God.
So for those of us who are completely Infernal illiterate, tell us kind of what the list does.
Teach us, Dark Master.
I'll be able to say that much better in the post-lock and load wrap-up.
I understand that we're all just a little bit Infernal illiterate right now.
Yeah, give us your guess. Have you played an Amadamas? Like, didn't you play with proxies for a couple times?
I played against Joe doing proxies.
And so has
but he wasn't
played?
Really doing Amadamas. He was
doing Zadaroth, right?
He was doing Agathon.
What? Joe, come on.
Well, part of that was because everyone else was doing other stuff, and so
yeah. But Amadamas is kind of your whore buffer, right? Like,
no,
or is he the beat stick guy?
Yeah, he's the beat stick, but he does have we say that, and it almost feels like they kind of advertise them, the three, as being like Agathon being a spell slinger, Zadaroth being a buffer, and Amadamas being a melee
beat stick. Right.
But, like, Amadamas still has a lot of cool
spells and stuff.
A lot of cool buffs. So, one of, like, here's what's funny. So, first of all, he has synergy.
Oh, geez. Okay.
And so,
your seven-cost Lamenters are going to get serious?
Well, it's kind of funny that, like, our quote-unquote non-buff guy has synergy as one of his spells. And then he also has Locked Horns, which is his unique spell, and it is friendly faction models gain unyielding, so which is also a
nice buff for your horrors. That's friendly faction models, though?
Yes.
That's nice.
And then he also has horrors in his battle group. When they destroy a living model, the souls basically get sent to
Wherever he was.
Amadamas.
Oh, okay.
So,
and does he turn the souls into?
And I think that it's actually going to end up having a little bit of a variable. How strong he is might depend on
matchup.
How many souls he's going to be getting in a matchup.
He doesn't have ways to.
That's unfortunate.
Does he have ways to give him his own? Like, he doesn't have.
And
he doesn't have a pot, does he?
No.
Okay.
Should he?
No. Yes. I mean, would it get more minions onto tables?
I'm kind of excited to. I don't know yet if the Infernal Gate is going to be how good it will be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the models that was changing quite a bit up to the last CID update. And so I don't know if we've seen its final form
yeah.
yet. But I'm assuming you guys at least saw the picture of from the unboxing of the Infernal Gate.
Yeah. Yes, I did see.
Yes,
it, yeah.
And what is your guys' opinion?
I mean, it's not a Dracodile, but it seems.
but what is
exactly? It seems pretty legit, honestly.
I'm sure someone will make it look really great, but it feels like it needs. I just don't know that you could even do this, but it's one of those things where it's very hard to take something that feels like it should have some motion to it, like a shimmering gate of some sort, and turn it into a static model that
somebody
does.
Somebody'll do like they did with the Sacral Vault. Somebody awesome at a Lock and Load. This was years ago. I remember they had sculpted like a rad portal.
Sure.
On top of the.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that somebody can't do it. I'm just saying it feels like it needs it. And I feel like most people won't be able to, or it feels like, I mean, it's way beyond my capabilities, but sure. it'd be what I would want to do is.
You could do it with like cotton balls and, what are those little candlelights you have at wedding? What do you call those tiny?
I have no idea.
Talk louder when you're mumbling about.
When I'm mumbling about candles and stuff.
Weird wedding things.
Anyway, I get what you're saying.
I could think of several things that you could do just off the top of my head that I don't know how to do, but I know that they can be done. But the truth is it's one of those models I look at it and I go, man, that feels really static when I would really want it to have something else, something more on it, personally. So
I'm pretty excited for it. I think that the model is pretty cool. Currently, here's what it currently does / costs. It's currently a 12-point model, which... is a decent price for a huge base. Has 25 points. It has eyeless sight, forward deployment. It can't move, obviously. It's an infernal portal. So when you're summoning a horror within 8 inches of this model, you reduce the essence cost by 1. It is a soul taker, crypt of souls. It can have soul tokens. And at the start of your control phase, it receives a D3 soul tokens if it doesn't have any.
Oh, good. Okay.
It has 3 abilities. First one is Dark Abyss. During your maintenance phase, you can spend up to 3 soul tokens to return, 1 destroyed smaller medium base soulless friendly faction grunt for each soul token you spend. Next one is Gate of Worlds. You can spend a soul token during its activation to basically do a slipstream of a model that's within 5 inches of it. And Strength of Death, it can use its soul tokens to boost its attack or damage rolls. And then on its gun, it is range 12, rate of fire 1, AoE 4, POW 14. And it has Ghost Shot and Reload 1.
Nice.
So I would have rather that gun had a low rat and no damage and just had auto-consume. Like, pull it into the portal.
That it wouldn't have gotten soul tokens from what it's consuming.
I don't care.
You're a, okay, you're well. A dank DM, baby.
I mean, yeah, if this were a D&D campaign, that's what that portal would do to my PCs.
I believe that, yes.
Is this Amadamus list, Jay? Would you, like, if you had another pairing ready, like, what would your pairing be? Sorry, that's what I'm really trying to ask.
Well, right now, I have... The casters that I have.
Oh, 4 or 3 is who you're going to pair them. No.
Well, I wouldn't even probably be doing Amadamus.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, it'd likely be Zadaroth and Fiora 3. So there's 3 Infernal Masters. At launch, the 2 are Amadamus and Zadaroth.
Okay.
And then in September is the release date of Agathon. And I'm not expecting that we'll see Agathon at Lock and Load either, but we could be surprised, I guess.
Right.
But I don't think we will be.
Okay. And so are you really only playing Amadamus because of the painting thing?
Well, no.
Okay.
I mean, this is your like, fell, influence has corrupted me, Josh, because...
You only want to play stuff that looks cool?
No, well, I mean, like, Amadamus is one of the coolest fucking models in the game.
And I'm going to go beyond that, so I think he might be the coolest.
He's a rad-looking model, 100%.
So, like, your question was, like, would I only... or why would you play Amadamus or whatever? I mean, part of it is just because he's a fucking cool model. I want to have him on the table. So,
okay.
You know.
It is your Dracodile-based justifications, I understand.
Okay. And honestly, if Champions didn't have the, you have to play two separate theme forces, then
you'd play the two
my pairing
masters.
Would be Amadamus and Zataroth.
Okay. Well, and so the other thing I was kind of wanting to ask is, like, I mean, maybe we'll.
And
maybe,
I have no idea, like, when it gets time to make an optimized Steamroller pairing.
Yeah.
If it's going to be better off taking two Dark Legacy lists or Dark Legacy and Hearts of Darkness.
Yeah, because that's. I was sort of wondering if, like, this is an all comers kind of list or. If
well,
it, or you think if it's skewed a little bit or.
There are some people who have done a bunch of proxy games
with
Infernals. Mm-hmm. I am not one of those people. I have a hard time playing with.
I do too.
An army of proxies.
Yeah, it's not very engaging. It's hard to remember what you're doing.
Right.
Just there's a lot of things about it. It's not fun.
Not that I'm. If other people, I don't mind playing against proxies, but. And I like that there are people who are grinding out a bunch of games. So, anyways, one of the kind of consensuses so far is that Zataroth is probably more of the
all-comer
caster. And who knows?
And is there a consensus on what Amadamus might, like, you know?
I mean, I don't know. It's a little bit tough to say where he does have locked horns and synergy, which just seem like really good.
Beast buffs?
Yeah.
Or horror buffs?
Yeah. For the stuff that Zataroth has, I guess real quick.
I'm sorry. Every time I hear you say horror buffs, I think like...
Victorian England?
No, I think a prostitute expert.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
I'm sorry.
Wouldn't it be like enthusiast, not expert?
Okay. I would accept that. All right. Sure.
Amadamus' feat is he casts lock horns for free with no essence, and then Amadamus and his faction models in his control range gain +2 speed and ghostly.
Oh my land. You have some pretty good threat with this list then.
Hopefully.
I mean, like, even with the Infernal Gate adding a little extra slipstream.
Yeah.
Like.
Okay, then Zataroth, her feat, and Zataroth is the one that she has kind of like some octopus tentacles coming up out of her, out of the bottom, and one of them's holding up a book in front of her, and she's kind of pointing in front of her. Her feat is friendly faction models gain +3 defense. When an enemy model misses a friendly faction model in Zataroth's control range with an attack, immediately after the attacker is resolved, place the friendly model anywhere completely within 3 inches of its current location.
Okay.
She has long shadows. She has a command of 12, and when a friendly faction model in the smallest command range is targeted by a range attack, that attack suffers -3 range, which I believe can be...
That's pretty good.
...comboed with Valen Hawk.
The Fallen Knight.
Unless his has been changed.
Well, and all these are potentially... Right. Could be changed.
I think his has been changed. His is... While in this mouse command range of 10, infernal models cannot be knocked down or made stationary. There is another one that has a bubble of +2 armor, the spell that gives +2 armor to spells and...
Not deceleration.
Yeah, I think that...
That's range, though.
Yeah, it's... No, deceleration does range down spells.
Oh, it does? Okay.
Yeah. But between that and her -3, it kind of gives some anti-range options that... a lot of people feel is one of the weaknesses of Infernals. And so that is good.
They brought magic to a world without guns. Then they invaded the world filled with guns.
She can take damage to keep spells from being dispelled. And her spell list, she has Black Spot, Distraction for -2 defense and mat, Ghost Walk, Rites of Torment when a friendly faction model in the spellcaster's control range destroys one or more enemy models with a melee or a range attack during its activation. Immediately after the attack is resolved, one horror in the spellcaster's battle group that is in the control range can advance 3 inches. It's kind of unfortunate that they can't just do a universal spell on Road to War or whatever the other current versions are of that. And Scything Touch and Stygian Abyss. And she is a Focus 7 Amadamos is a 6, and then Agathon is a 9.
I don't mind the Road to War. I can't think of the Hordes one. And then the Horror one.
Right.
All having a different name, with the only difference being War Beast, you know, War Jack.
Right,
or
yeah.
Whatever, because truthfully, I understand what it is with the different name anyway. So, and that keeps the others from being super wordy. So that one doesn't bother me as much. But.
Okay.
I'm curious if we can, well, you tell me what we're doing next, but I'm really curious if we're going to be able to preview at all your lock and load dining plans.
they have been laid out.
We did get a comment from a listener that he hit all of the recommendations that Jay gave at Las Vegas on a vacation trip to Las Vegas.
And probably had a fantastic vacation,
yeah, he said
right?
It was great.
Yeah. Jay does not disappoint often.
Okay, well, Thursday night, I'm planning on doing dinner with Hungerford, likely at P.F. Chang's.
So the torment is as delicious as the meal.
It is. on Friday, I'm going to cut out of the con a little bit early that night, and around 3:34, we're going to head to Pike's Market in Seattle. And
I love that place.
Walk the market, and then we have a dinner reservation at like 6 or 6:30 at Dahlia Lounge.
Have you eaten the crepes at Pike's Place
uh-huh.
before?
Mm-hmm.
I love the crepes,
Josh.
A savory crepe,
Josh. Although
there's just so many options, I didn't mean to presume that you.
It does show the difference in you and I that you're like, oh, the savory crepes, and I'm like, oh, the Nutella strawberry and whipped cream crepes.
I mean.
Josh wants a plate of both.
Yes, right. There's no reason to limit yourself, really.
Fair, yeah.
What's your favorite thing at the Dahlia Lounge?
Oh, it varies some, but their Peking duck is really good. And also they're for dessert, uh-huh. They're really famous for their coconut cream pie and their donuts.
Have I been there before?
Yes.
I had their coconut cream pie.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Gosh, all this makes me think of. Remember the duck confit we had in Las Vegas at.
You have been there and potentially multiple times, but I know at least once. I think if you've been there with us, we go every year.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to remember. Trying to remember what I had other than I do remember the coconut cream pie, but
you're thinking of Bouchon.
Bouchon. So, slight follow up question. Besides tormenting Hungerford, like, what do you like at P.F. Chang's? Like, what is it that you like to eat there?
Oh, I like their hot and sour soup.
Oh,
to start.
Nice.
That's one of my favorite soups.
I'm with Hungerford. I don't like P.F. Chang's, but I would go just to be with Hungerford hating it.
Yes. No. I understand that that's like the main appeal of the meal for Jay.
And either their Mongolian beef is solid or usually what I order is their, I'm trying to think what city it is. It might be Shanghai. I don't know. Some fake regional cuisine. Street noodles is the...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's
I don't think I've had those.
It's a curried...
curried street noodles.
Street noodles, yeah.
And seriously, I was thinking about this last night as I was cleaning up my family. Like, whoever came up with curry, bless that. Seriously. That's such a delicious dish. Spice, whatever you want to call it. Okay. All right, carry on. So we're through the Dahlia Lounge.
Yeah, last Friday, Saturday. We're going... It's probably... So... Hungerford teases us about this, that a lot of times when we go to places, we'll go to like P.F. Chang's or some chain places. But part of the reason why it ends up doing that is that Brian, there's a lot of food that actually makes Brian sick at this point.
Yeah.
And so he knows that he can go to P.F. Chang's and get
like
something that he knows
safe,
that's not going to make him sick.
Right.
And so we'll probably be going to the Cheesecake Factory.
which, irony,
there's stuff at the Cheesecake Factory he knows won't make him sick.
Yeah. Well, that's because their menu is like...
That's true, yeah.
When they burned the Library of Alexandria, the Cheesecake Factory managed to rescue all books on food and make it their menu. Like, it's insanity. That is my wife's, like, I think it might be her favorite restaurant, Jay. It's so...
Just because she can always find something.
I don't know why.
On
I don't understand it.
Does she even eat the cheesecake?
Oh, yeah, she likes cheesecake, too.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably her favorite dessert, cheesecake.
I mean, I think
maybe homemade strawberry.
I think we have solved the riddle of why it might be her.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, that might be the case. I'm just too focused on this because it's fine, right? Like,
yeah,
that's my feelings about the Cheesecake Factory. I'm like, this is fine. It's fine.
So,
like, and I'll have the cheesecake, and it's delicious. I enjoy it.
Yes.
But then, like, if you ever make the mistake of looking at the nutritional information on their cheesecake.
Oh, yeah. Your self-loathing will go off the charts.
Right. And, like, there's so many other things that are, like, when you start making the calorie to...
The trade-off calculation.
Right. Yeah. You're like, wow, this totally isn't worth this many calories. Right. But, and this is like a weird side ramble of unintended consequences or whatever, but I listened to a, I think it was a Freakonomics podcast that said this, and it talked about how, you know, part of, I think it was Obamacare instituted that you had to start putting calories on your menus, right? And they did a study on it, and the breakdown on it was basically 10% of the population used it to reduce their calorie intake, try to be healthier.
Okay.
80% ignored it, and 10% used it to increase their calorie intake.
Like
like they used it as like that must,
like it's that a must, game, right? Like I'm gonna
that must taste better. It's got more calories.
Oh, or it's nice. Like I'm going to get more bang for my buck if
I've only spent $1 for this 1,000 calorie item versus $5 for this 500 calorie item, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. That is amazing.
Humans are amazing.
Yes, that's true. It's all part of what I love about being on this planet.
It seemed like I interrupted you.
I don't know what I
was. This was too far back. Yeah, we've gone too far.
All right.
Then
I think I'm 43 now. We've taken that long. So
okay. And then Brian wanted to like get some snack foods while we were at Pike's place.
Yeah.
And then take those back with us. And the next day at Saturday, he's like, we should do some party games at the con and then eat the snack food that we had from Pike's.
Okay.
And
I'm cool. Like,
who are you?
Does he have like specific party games in mind or proposed?
No, I don't know.
Are you taking Jalapagos?
I probably will. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
We've been having such a great time with Jalapagos. Did I tell you about my last game?
No.
My 16-year-old like made a dark pact with another young man and they slaughtered everyone. Like this was like a 10-person game. Like, and despite I was like so angry and so deeply proud all at once. I don't know what the German mix word for that is, you know. But I was like, you dirty little bugger. Like, yeah, she murdered us all.
And nobody saw what was going on?
Nobody listened hard enough soon enough. Right?
Yeah, that's generally what happens.
Because what happened is the metagame of my life, which you guys play into plenty, is that you can make Wheeler a target early on.
Right.
But my kids can especially do it in like a group of people that we deal with that often.
Yeah. Because
they're like, oh yeah, dad is like the great evil. He is the big bad, right? Well,
right.
Obviously, yes.
I mean, they're correct.
I'm an agent of chaos. It's different.
Chaos is a ladder, Josh.
All right, so snack foods with party games.
Yeah, and then Sunday, last year, Plumber took me to a farm-to-table restaurant, and it was on a night when Brian hadn't arrived yet, and farm-to-table is Brian's favorite genre of food, and so we are...
It's so good, usually.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to go to that Sunday night. We're going with the Paganis, and so should be a good time.
So you won't be eating it. What's the giant steakhouse we ate?
Brian doesn't like John Howie.
Okay. I just still remember Aaron Whale destroying... Was it 80 pounds of meat that he destroyed?
80 ounces.
Part of it...
He could do pounds.
Brian. Part of it is that, like, Brian can't eat beef at this point.
Right.
And so when you...
Those are basically your options.
Right. I mean, when you're going to a steakhouse and you can't eat red meat, it's an issue.
It's almost like having kids. You take them to a nice restaurant and they're like, I want hamburgers and fries. I know it's not like that with Brian.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it just feels...
It's the opposite of that.
The limited options. Yeah, you're right. It is the opposite of that.
You take him to a nice restaurant and he's like, can I get some chicken breast and broccoli, please?
It must be much more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I was thinking.
And Lake House is the name of the...
The farm-to-table place.
Yeah. Excellent. You can say...
I'm not food-focused at all.
After 4 days. But I haven't said this yet, I don't think, on Twitter or wherever, but everyone should tune in to the Iron Gauntlet, and I should be a commentator for...
What?
the games, or at least one of the games. I'm not sure how many I'll be commentating.
Do you should I anticipate as I'm listening to the this is on the for the Iron Gauntlet?
Uh-huh,
should I anticipate any Dank Dune meme being sent to the comment stream? If you give me just one, I will be so deeply proud. Jay. That's all I'm saying.
I'll probably just try to slip in things like the sleeper must awaken or
sufficient.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Right here, fear is the mind killer.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, he holds at his opponent's neck. The Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
We are simple people.
But I am... A few things I'm also looking forward to with the trip. I'll be getting games in the Iron Arena with my Infernals list, so looking forward to that.
So come and administer beatings.
Yes. I'll also be likely trying to hit up a few seminars as able and tweeting some of that. And then also two things that I'm looking forward to. One is that Aaron Well is basically starting his trip to America with coming to Lock and Load, and he's rooming with us, and so it's going to be great to see him. And then Joe is one of our locals, and it's his first convention.
Oh, for real?
For War Machine, and so I'm interested to see what he thinks of that.
Hope he enjoys it.
Yeah.
That I hope it's awesome.
Yeah.
I have regrets.
Well, you and me both.
But next year, I have high hopes.
High in the sky hopes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, do either of you guys have any other topics before we start talking about like dad jokes and promised Dune like, memes and et cetera?
I was like, is I it have time a, for my bonus Dank Dune meme yet?
I have a topic, but it's really better for this in part, so I'm going to leave it for that.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
I was going to ask just real quick, Jay, like, well, I guess that you already kind of answered the question. You're basically going to be playing in the Iron Arena, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So... I was actually curious if you thought you might do a caster draft scramble at all. I would love that. Because didn't you just do a caster draft at the store a couple weekends back?
Yeah, and... we'll just do another caster draft here at some point. So.
Okay. I just noticed that that's one of the events on the event list for Lock and Load, is that having caster draft
scrambles. Caster draft scrambles at Lock and Load are pretty difficult to get in.
Just oh, really? Oh, yeah. Just because
they're popular.
They're quite popular, yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's cool, though. Okay. All right, you may begin, Jay.
Okay, so the... this is a "Is your child texting about" meme. And this one is
where they basically break down acronyms into things that they're really not.
Yes. Well, no. What?
I mean,
you've ruined it.
I didn't mean that.
So, is my child texting about Dune? Here's what your child's text messages really mean: AF equals M Fremen. IMHO, I must have Orin. IDFC, is Duncan from Caladan? NP, next Padishaw. MRW, Melange-related warfare.
I don't even know what some of these are in real life.
It's because you're old.
LOL, lover of Leto. IKR, I'd kill Raban. And SMH, spice mining heavily. Okay, delight us with a dad joke, Josh.
Well, actually, I went to a psychic the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I knocked on her front door. She yelled, "Who is it?" So I left.
Okay. Trevor.
For those who don't follow us on Facebook, I have to mention that I posted an image a few weeks ago, and it was stolen from somebody else. I just saw it and I thought it was humorous because it applied to us. And it was about how there's three white guys start a podcast sort of thing. It was just a random joke. And I threw it up on our Facebook page thinking that our fans would find it humorous. And it kind of went viral. Like, it was weird how we've picked up probably, I want to say, 800 new likes to our Facebook page of people who do not play War Machine.
Are they going to be disappointed?
Yeah, they don't play War Machine at all. They know nothing. I don't know what the hell they're thinking, but they just liked our page. And we got...
Last I saw, it had been seen like over 500,000 times.
Yeah, I don't understand what's happened here because we didn't make I didn't post it for the first time. We didn't make the image. I don't know why us posting it just took off, but whatever it did. And anyway, I cracked up because I was looking through my Twitter feed and I saw something related to it. A guy, another podcaster that I follow, he retweeted this and the tweet says, "When I run into an old friend and I have no idea what they've been up to, I just say, 'I love your podcast.'" Haven't been wrong yet.
Like, one of my favorite things about that thread on our Facebook group. So there's basically like, there's two responses to in that thread. The first one is people tagging their friends in it.
Yeah, and being saying, "Haha, you've started a podcast," or "Haha, we should start a podcast."
Correct. Yes. Yeah. The second one is, so one of the panels is like, says like, take any three generic white dudes and the next thing
unimportant
happens.
Yeah, with opinions and voila, we've just started a podcast.
Right. And like the second most common comment is like people who are incensed over the generic white dude panel.
Right, like that like they're being attacked by someone other right. than three generic white dudes.
Right. And like one of the comments was like, "I believe this comic must have been drawn by a woman who thinks that
I just read that
having a vagina means that her opinions are important or something." I'm like,
"Oh, yeah, I started
it's like, dude, put down your fucking red pill."
I started reading through some of them and I thought, "You know what? Maybe I should start like
moderating
it," but I'm like, "Oh gosh, really? I'll just let it die." You know, every time I look at it, I'm like, it's going to go away. It'll die. No one will pay attention to it anymore. And it just keeps going. Oh my
gosh. It's got legs.
You can't put dirt over the nuclear reactor and expect the meltdown to stop. There's graphite on the ceiling.
Did you see that? I haven't watched Chernobyl yet.
Okay.
But did you see the thing that like Instagrammers are like going there and posting like,
oh my god,
semi-sexy shots and stuff. Like one of the authors that I follow posted it and he was like, what did he say? He's like, "I too hope that someone will post a picture of their butt next to my gravesite," or something like that. Because there's literally like a, you know, like half dressed lady like standing by Chernobyl. It's insanity. Like,
my only solace with this,
yes,
is that like anyone who does this, hopefully they like catch cancer in a year and eliminate themselves from the gene pool, and hopefully they haven't reproduced yet, or maybe it'll make them sterile. I don't know.
It's amazing how much attention it's bringing back to that old disaster.
Right? Well, and my fear is, and one of the things that I read an article about it, how HBO basically did what Hollywood does. They take it up considerable.
Sure, yeah.
Kick it up a notch. Yeah,
kick it up
a notch.
You gotta hyperbolize a little bit.
Right, and that it has created a new wave of fear against nuclear power.
True. Oh, I didn't think of that.
And their complaint was, hey, you know, we've just barely gotten through this irrational fear of nuclear power, and we're actually thinking about using it again. And then Hollywood does this. And I don't want to blame, I mean, HBO doesn't really care. I mean, they're in it for the money. It's not really, they're not in it for the, you know, the sociopolitical aspect of it. So
right. Having watched it, I guess.
Are you more afraid of bureaucracy than nuclear power?
I mean, that was supposedly the theme of it is anti-bureaucracy, not
right,
anti-nuclear power.
The real horror isn't the nuclear power plant. It's the bureaucracy. And it's a very well done show. It's entertaining. You know, I wouldn't watch it as a documentary.
Yeah, that's probably not a good idea.
But it definitely works as a piece of entertainment.
Yeah, I want to see it desperately, personally, because I think that it's an interesting thing.
I would be very interested to hear your opinion on it.
I just don't know how I would see it. I would have to find somebody else's account to log into the HBO thing. But anyway,
that would never happen.
Yeah, I don't know how that would potentially happen. But anyway, I'm very interested in it. But anyway, I found it interesting that you know, there's become kind of a groundswell recently of interest in nuclear power and that returning from ages gone by, and then this sort of hit. So anyway, sort of here nor there or whatever. But I did see the Instagram thing and thought it just. The funny thing is
it's peak humanity.
It is peak humanity, but the funny thing is it was one of the, I think it was the producer of the show came out and said, hey, don't go do that.
Right.
And the Instagram accounts that I saw were all Russian. Like they weren't watching this guy. They weren't. Right. The only reason that they may have seen the show in, you know, translated or whatever, but they did not. They were not reading the tweets of some English speaking Hollywood producer and be like,
I better not
go to my own country's, you know, thing. So I don't think it's Americans hopping on a plane and running.
It was already kind of I don't want to call it like a tourist attraction, but like it was a place that people went and like.
One of the things that I had read a little bit on that is also interesting in relation to this is. Like the different reaction to it in Russia.
Oh yeah, I did notice that article.
Like them believing like this is American propaganda,
right?
This never was something that I had considered as a possibility, but like it brought up the Russian conspiracy theory that Chernobyl was caused by American spies.
The show brings that up?
No.
Oh, this article did. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, crazy. Stretch Trevor has a look on his face.
No, I mean.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Listen, there are very few paranoia scenarios that you can present to me that I won't think at least momentarily. Yeah, that's possible.
Well.
No, it's possible.
Like, is
100%.
I'm trying to think what the line is that. I would say, like, no, America would not do that during the Cold War. I don't fucking know what it is.
I don't want to try to draw that line.
It is kind of weird
as, like, the three of us are old enough that we remember being little kids during the Cold War.
Oh, yeah.
And during Gorbachev and Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
Tear down this wall.
And the word Russian was a dirty word.
Oh, yeah. And, like, I remember watching, like, TV shows that were a little kid that were basically about, like, nuclear holocaust or...
Yeah, I mean, what was that one?
There was always a TV movie
that's really good about the nuclear holocaust.
I don't remember.
Yeah, there's the Game Master is, like... War games of nuclear holocaust. Mm-hmm. Anyways, there was always this like overlaying fear of like, you know, we just might kill each other in a nuclear holocaust randomly at any moment.
Well, and it's hard to express to somebody who's too young to have not lived it, but it was really it was put through every piece of media, like all the bad guys were Russians, everything. And if you go back and consume that media now, and it's way over the top, and you're like, wow, that's really kind of weird. And if you never experienced it, it must feel even more so. But to me, I'm looking at it going, oh, yeah, I understand.
Like, inject that Red Dawn directly into the vein.
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
Original Red Dawn only, please.
is that like a perfect Trevor movie?
Red Dawn. Oh yeah, it's probably in my top 20 easy.
I haven't watched it in ages, so.
Oh, it doesn't probably hold up well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
There are some aspects of it that do hold up quite well, but certainly part of the problem is a lot of the 80s films don't hold up because of just changes in cinematography.
Yeah,
visual effects and storytelling, honestly. I mean,
right.
They've just gotten better
soundtracks.
At writing movies and stuff. Yeah, but I still love Red Dawn a lot.
Okay, well, watch Chernobyl.
I'm
duly noted.
Super interested.
Cool. All right. Well, on that note, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to another episode of
Chain Attack.